What some people are calling the restroom revolution in North Carolina is refueling an ongoing national debate over LGBTQ rights. But unisex restrooms are only part of a larger civil rights movement underway in America. It was standing room only yesterday as more than 100 people packed the Michigan Department of Education headquarters in Lansing. They had come to comment on the State Board of Education's proposed recommendations for creating what it terms a safe and supportive learning environment for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and questioning students. The board's grappling with a number of issues, from including LGBTQ topics as part of school curriculum to restroom accommodations. Board members say whatever they come up with will be offered as a set of guidelines and not a mandate. My colleague Kevin Lavery joins me now in the studio with more on this developing issue. Kevin, you witnessed some of the public comment period. Tell us a little more about it.
I did, Mark. I was there at the start of the comment period, and then I left after I gathered a handful of interviews, which you'll hear. But this really was a marathon session that stretched on for several hours yesterday. As you noted, the proposed recommendation before the board covers a lot of ground. It talks about creating and enforcing anti-harassment policies, providing staff professional development opportunities. It even talks about ensuring that school libraries contain information about LGBTQ issues. At the hearing, I met two teachers who are also a married couple. Jennifer and Andy Robinson live in the Kalamazoo area, but they did not come yesterday as teachers. You see, Jennifer and Andy have a four-year-old named Gracie. Actually, that's the name she's given herself. Gracie was born Benjamin. Jennifer, Andy, and I found ourselves talking near a noisy service elevator outside the boardroom. The Robinsons are already trying to prepare for Gracie's future as a transgender student.
Initially, we thought it was a phase, and we thought that, you know, she was young, and you let little children play with the things that they want to play with, and as long as they're happy, then, you know, it's a phase and it'll pass. Over time, it became clear to us that it wasn't a phase, and she began to get very adamant and defiant about us calling her Ben and calling her he and things of that nature. And so when we did a little bit more research and kind of asked around and asked some experts, they suggested that this might be the possibility, and we knew that that's what was going on and that's what was right for her.
And she picked her own name, Gracie?
We gave a list of some unisex names that were, you know, applicable for boys or girls, and then we let her choose out of that list.
Andy, tell me about the mental transition that you and Jennifer had to go through once you realized this was the course that she was on, that, you know, the decisions you started to have to make about her future.
It was a tough process because, you know, our biggest concern was her well-being, but once it kind of became clear that this was the road we were going down, we wanted to make sure we weren't pushing anything on her or that we weren't holding her back. So it just became a process of, you know, educating ourselves and seeking out anybody that we could find to help us with this process. I mean, even today, that's been a great part, is just being able to network with people, you know, who share our experiences or who have resources that can help us when we get to that point, because that's what it's all about right now, is just finding the resources so we can give her the, you know, the best chance that we can.
Gracie is four, so she will be starting kindergarten, is it this coming fall?
Yes.
Has she been through a preschool or any kind of a socialized setting before?
Yep, she's been in preschool and daycare settings since birth.
And how have her peers received her?
The peers, at first, the biggest difference for them was really just the name adjustment, but she had always gone to, you know, the first stop at daycare was the dress corner, and on with the princess dresses and the bride's dresses, and her best friends there were female, and so the behavior didn't really change. She was still who she was. We just were calling her by different pronouns and a different name, but they didn't miss a beat.
Obviously, this is just a hearing phase, but it seems like if anything does happen, it could be good timing for Gracie to start kindergarten. What are you hoping for in terms of an outcome?
Long term, my hopes for the outcome would be that we don't have to have this conversation anymore, that it just is part of how we handle students, and it's just one more thing that we routinely do and plan for. For Gracie in particular, I feel thankful and fortunate that it is taking place at a time when this conversation is being had, and we're not having to be secretive about it, and we're not trying to overcome, you know, overt and blatant discrimination.
What's on your mind about this, Andy?
Well, I think it's just that we just want her to be in an environment where she's accepted, and we don't have to fight the discrimination the entire way through.
So Andy Robinson mentioned finding resources to help Gracie and themselves navigate this reality. Is that already happening, Kevin?
It would seem so. I don't know how many people they have reached out to so far, but while I was there, Jennifer and Andy Robinson were approached by a pediatrician who did express her support for them. As they said, the Robinsons certainly do not want Gracie to grow up as a target of discrimination, but of course, sadly, that does happen, and it did happen to a young woman that I met there at the hearing. Kate Fessler is from Canton. She left Michigan a couple of years ago for college, but she remembers all too well her school days in Michigan and what it felt like when she realized that she was a lesbian.
So I spent 12 years in the Michigan public school system, and it was a very difficult 12 years for me, especially when I reached a point where I started to realize that I might not be straight. And when I heard about the guidelines, I was very excited because I know that they could be an amazing thing for our school system and for LGBTQ youth. So when I heard about these hearings and I had heard that there was some backlash against the guidelines, I thought that hopefully, you know, if I could just kind of tell my story and what had gone on with me, that that might help make it so that the school board would be able to put a face to the students who struggle in schools, and it might help kind of, yeah, it might help.
Have you had personal struggles with your own identity in terms of your peers and your fellow students?
Yes, I definitely have. The story that I told in front of the school board was about when I was in eighth grade. My best friend found out I was gay and told everyone at school, and no one would talk to me by the end of the year. And then when I was in 12th grade, I had finally come out, and I was out. I was one of the very few out students at my high school. And an editorial came out that was anti-gay marriage in my school newspaper. And I was one of the few people that was very easily targeted with comments and slurs and a lot of bullying kind of throughout my public school education.
How long have you been out of high school?
I'm now about to be a junior in college, so I just completed my sophomore year.
And how do you think the tone is now that you're in college, society's tone? Do you think it's changed at all and is a little more sympathetic to people like you now?
I think that to some extent it is. I think that it really depends on where you are geographically. I go to school in Massachusetts, and I found that out there it's much less of a big deal. When people find out that I'm gay, it's kind of that's nice. And, you know, it's not a problem for anyone. So that makes it kind of difficult when I come home. Because while there are a lot of people in my life who are very affirming and who are very supportive, I do also run into people who, you know, stare at me in the grocery store or whisper things, and that can be very difficult. But I think overall, hopefully the trajectory that our society is moving in is a much more accepting one.
And what the Board of Education is doing, that does not affect you directly. You're already out of Michigan's public schools. That would have no real direct bearing on your life, yet you still felt compelled to give your testimony. What brought you to that decision?
I think that for our community, youth is a huge part. You know, making sure that they feel safe in their schools is huge. It's very important so that we can have LGBTQ adults who can grow up and can look out for the youth. And to be a part of that is very important to me. I also have 5 younger brothers and sisters who are all in the Michigan public school system. And my family is mixed race. It's very, very important to me that no one, for any reason, be bullied or feel like they are unsafe at school.
So Kate Fessler has an interest in seeing the state adopt an inclusive LGBTQ policy. Was there much opposition at the hearing, Kevin?
Indeed, there was. There were a handful of protesters outside the building when I arrived. Some of them, Mark, were with a group called the Bible Nation Society. That's a group based in Michigan that claims to be affiliated with some 16,000 churches across the United States. I met its founder and director, Douglas Levesque. He had just testified against the proposal, which he feels came together in a less than open manner.
We feel like they've been, frankly, produced somewhat in secrecy. And then secondly, that they not only don't represent a majority of Christians. Michigan, historically and today, is about 85% identifies Christianized. And we believe that the State Board of Education is practicing an advocacy of sorts that really is against our way of life and our mindset. So we felt like we needed to show up and just tell the board that we felt that this was a political issue that probably should be left more to legislators. I think maybe they want to give voice to, you know, the issues of real people who are struggling. We're certainly sympathetic to that. The Christian faith loves souls. Every soul has sin, has error. And so we try to approach all those with love.
What would you say, though, to those who may say, morality issues aside, this is an issue of public safety, of finding a place where LGBTQ students can be safe from intimidation, violence?
Right, exactly. You know, obviously, we don't advocate violence towards somebody who's different at all, and so it's foolish to say that. But they're the ones bringing out the statistics saying that LGBTQ students have greater mental illness, troubles at home, troubles at school, troubles at violence. It's like advocating a refugee crisis. We're advocating this. We're saying, and now we want to promote, you know, prepubescent children to take their, perhaps their puberty and then question their gender. The idea of gender identity is not a medical issue, it's a psychological issue. They admit that. And they're wanting an adaptation of society, an adaptation that we disagree with and that we don't want. And so, understandably, there are issues to deal with, but we don't think that advocating policy through the Board of Education is the right thing to do.
So what should these students do who feel caught in the middle?
Well, you know, there are 250,000 private parochial homeschool students in the state of Michigan. The state of Michigan provides online education for them for free. That doesn't count the many charter schools students that are out there as well that public funding is going to. Half of all tax revenues are going to the Michigan Board of Education, and yet black graduation rates are second worst in the nation. Hispanic graduation rates are third worst in the nation. We need to be focusing on those issues. This, frankly, is not a school issue. It should be maybe a law enforcement issue. It should be a parental rights issue. It should be a legislative issue. But this is not for the Board of Education to dictate policy when we come to, you know, 4,000 years of the Judeo-Christian ethic.
Again, even if it comes down to a safety argument, a legal accommodation argument.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. We're not saying that there's not obstacles to overcome, but we don't think that pushing absolute acceptance and then additional fundings when we don't have enough funding as it is the way to go.
It was a very full day of testimony, Kevin. Lots of passion on both sides. What happens now?
Well, the public comment period ends at close of business today. The State Board of Education expects to sift through about 15,000 comments. State Superintendent Brian Whiston says this process will take a while. He says the earliest that the board may take any action at all will be in August. And Mr. Whiston was adamant that this will be a very public process with a lot of transparency built in.
We will keep an eye on it. Current State's Kevin Lavery. Thank you, Kevin.
My pleasure, Mark.